One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors. Great companies like Sun Warrior Plant-Based Protein. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. Enviromedica, makers of Terra Flora. A novel, broad-spectrum symbiotic formulated with a combination of spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Paleo Magazine, the well-being journal, the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorne Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
The content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, Navit Mendoza, and Jill Lane. Yeah, wow. Whew. Crazy morning. How you doing, Jill?
I'm good. I'm here.
I'm going to pull present. You into I'm the here. Present moment.
Be
oh
present.
My gosh.
Well, presence is the key.
Yeah, presence is the key. You just came from a workout with Tina. And yeah. Did you get a good workout in?
We got a workout in.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had workouts like that where I'm like, listen, I got 15 minutes. And then when we were working out one day last week, she tried to get me to do these inchworms that I don't like to do. I'm like, I'm only doing a couple of them.
She goes,
okay, Missy. Mm. You know?
I'm only doing a couple.
I generally do what she says.
I do too. Almost always. But that day I just wasn't having any inchworms.
I wasn't feeling the inchworm.
Well, my transpecies are so overdeveloped, I think, from is that what these are?
Isn't your trapezies?
Whatever they're called.
Say it again.
I don't know. These right here. What are these called?
I just need you to say it again.
That was trapezius.
It was like geometry and physiology
and
mixed together. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm a master at that. That's what I'm really good at, is taking two words and quickly making them into one. But mine are too big, and I don't like it. I got like dude.
They're too big.
Back things.
Too big. Dude back things.
When I hold my boobs up and push my shoulders straight back, I feel like they look more normal.
You okay. know?
I do think that I couldn't imagine having boobs any bigger than I mean, I don't know how women carry some of them around.
Mm.
I really don't, and have like not have back issues.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
Like the double G's out there.
Big trapeziuses
yeah.
out there.
Yeah. Well, you and Diamond both. How do you handle it?
I'm fine.
Notice she didn't look at me at all. She just looked over at you. She knows what I got going on over here. It has nothing to do with big trapezius.
And Diamond's just smiling real big in there. Diamond's got like this amazing body. She's got this little tiny body, this perfect hourglass figure that, you know, that men crave, I think. Right?
Men crave bodies of all shapes and sizes.
They do. That is
Thank
true.
Thank you, Jill.
They do. But Diamond's got that. She's got that ball knocked out of the park over there.
Those trapezius may be big. You know, you worked in the kitchen for a long time, and I know my husband is a chef, and I get on to him about his posture a lot because he was so used to always being hunched over something, chopping,
the
cooking,
sink.
Carrying. And so anytime you're always doing a forward posture, whether it's that or even just at your computer, mm-hmm. your pecs get tight. I'm sure you've heard Bernadette or Tina talk about this a lot. And other guys that work, you know, they've had on the gym that are trainers, but your pecs get real tight, round your shoulders over. And then there's like this thing that just happens where your shoulders go up to your ears and your rhomboids, the middle kind of back muscles that keep your shoulder blades back and retracted, aren't strong enough because women don't like to like work their back.
And I grew up, you know, in Catholic school. And so I was very modest and conservative in my in my dress and in how I carry myself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're almost taught to like cover your breast up.
Right.
You know, kind of, sort of.
Button that top button.
Yeah, button that top. Well, man, you went
used to get yelled at by the nuns all the time.
Oh, you had nun school too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yep. They want that top button.
Bishop Lynch.
Mm.
Yeah.
I know my 12 and a half year old, it is a weird thing I've noticed, and I don't know what it is, but I'm always like, stand up straight. Like, I have to like put my hand, you know, like on that part of your back that makes you just lift up just a little. And I think maybe it is awkward for women because it involves feeling like you're sticking your boobs out.
Yeah.
But that's the proper posture.
It is.
And even my husband will be like this, and he'll like over exaggerate. I'm like, well, yeah, kind of. That is actually the way.
Yeah.
You kind of feel like a military person at the forefront, but that's the right way to do it.
And I just uncross my legs. My legs are crossed so much. I have to like.
I do that.
I have to consciously stop myself from crossing my legs.
Yeah.
I just don't. I don't know. I don't. I like crossing my legs.
I'm a leg crosser too.
I mean, I know, and that's not good for your posture either. I just uncrossed them.
I'll uncross them.
Who was it? Patricia Bragg of Bragg's Vinegar, she's a character. Oh my goodness. She was on the show a few years ago. And do you guys remember this when she said, and I'm trying to do her voice, I'm trying to remember her voice, but she's got a very distinct voice. Anyway, she said, don't wear underwire bras and uncross your legs.
I thought you were going to say, don't wear underwear. And that was having to do with the crossing of the legs. And I was
there,
like,
you go.
Wow.
Well,
Bragg's
you know,
Vinegar, get after
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, you know what? And I, that too.
And okay, so don't wear underwear or bras. Okay, and don't cross your legs.
Well, yeah. Don't cross your legs.
Okay.
Maybe.
I guess. Wow. For posture and just like overall wellness, I guess underwire bras, I mean, I...
Something like circulation, lymphatic drainage. Like, I've heard some things to do with that.
Yeah.
And I guess the crossing of the legs is the same thing. Poor circulation, maybe it affects... I have a hard time with the crossing of the legs.
Yeah.
I feel like that is like a dainty, ladylike thing.
Yeah.
You know, no one wants a woman like, hey.
I was watching, was it Princess Diaries? And she's like, just tuck your foot behind your other ankle.
Right.
And there you go.
That's how I do it. I just, like, I'm doing that right now. One ankle behind the other.
No, I got like a full on cross.
Crisscross.
Working.
I can't get the chair down low enough to get my thigh over the top. The table's in the way.
Yeah. Like, one knee is like completely over the other knee and Loctite.
My thighs are not of the size that I can do that usually under the table.
Oh my gosh, what a crazy talk this is. But you know, I'm super excited. I've got one of my favorite, if not my favorite author on the planet, Ryan Holiday. He is one of the world's foremost thinkers and writers on ancient philosophy and its place in everyday life. He is just unbelievable. His brain is unbelievable. And I'm not going to gush when I get him on the air because I get so excited when I get guys like this on the show because I love forward thinkers like this that are out there trying to help people to have a better life. And if you have never heard of Ryan Holiday, I encourage you to listen. You don't want to miss it, or you can listen to the podcast after the show. But incredible author. Just incredible. And then Jill Lane, she's another incredible one over there. We're going to be talking about...
One day maybe I'll say author after it.
Yeah. Well, you
I'll
know
be
what?
Like 80, but maybe
that's
it'll
okay.
happen.
Hey, get her done before you die. That's all that matters, right? But you're a pro athlete health and nutrition coach. And we're going to be talking about controlling your cravings during the holiday season based on a Thorne article. And I'm really looking forward to talking with Ryan. So I think we're just going to go to break and get after it because I'm excited and I want you to hear this. Stay tuned, everyone. Stillness is the Key with Ryan Holiday and Jill Lane.
I can wash out 44 pairs of socks and have them hanging out on the line. I can start an iron 24 shirts before you can count from 1 to 9. I can scoop up a great big dipper full of lard from the drippings can.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup.
What a perfect song picked by Navi Mendoza for this segment with Ryan Holiday. Everyone, welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, Navi Mendoza, Jill Lane, and our very special guest today, Ryan Holiday. He is one of the world's foremost thinkers and writers on ancient philosophy and its place in everyday life. He is a sought-after speaker and and the author of many best-selling books, including The Obstacle is the Way, Ego is the Enemy, The Daily Stoic, and his new book, Stillness is the Key. His books have been translated into more than 30 languages and have sold more than 2 million copies worldwide. As I said, his new book, Stillness is the Key, debuted number one on the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal bestsellers list. He currently lives outside of Austin, Texas with his family, and I am thrilled to have you on the show today, Ryan. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks so much for having me.
Gosh, I just love your writing so much. I just absolutely think that you like maybe are one of my favorite writers ever in the world.
Oh, wow. I'm honored.
And I have to quit gushing because I get really gushy when I'm speaking with someone that I really respect, especially a writer like yourself. So, you know, which philosophical schools of thought and beliefs in mastering stillness, what are they?
Well, it's interesting. I think when people hear that word stillness, they probably think Eastern philosophy, and then they go, look, I don't have time for a 30-day meditation retreat, or, you know, I can't move to a monastery or an ashram. And I totally get that. And so one of the things that I sort of set out to do in my research is look at other schools of philosophy that talk about the same idea. And as it happens, you know, Stoicism, which is typically the school I write about, is sort of very bullish and sort of very deeply believes in the power of stillness as well. And I think, you know, when you read some places' meditations and you hear the Emperor of Rome talk about the power and the importance of stillness, of slowing things down, of being what's inessential, you realize, oh, this isn't just some inner peace thing for the heck of it. This is actually a strategy for busy, important, powerful people, or people who are trying to do something in the world.
Well, it's brilliant the way you've delivered this information from ancient rulers, right? You were speaking of the Roman Emperor. You're speaking of Marcus Aurelius, right?
Yes, yes.
And so much of your work is based on that, along with Seneca and,
yes.
And who else?
And I think what's so interesting, so on the one hand, you have a Marcus Aurelius, you go, oh, okay, the emperor, wouldn't that be nice? But Marcus Aurelius' sort of main philosophical influence is a guy named Epictetus, who had been a slave. And so it's this philosophy for people who are, I think, undergoing extreme adversity or extreme success. And in either instance, what you need is that sort of inner calm. You need clarity. You need focus. You need purpose. You know, the sort of four disciplines of Stoicism are courage, moderation, justice, and wisdom. And I think what those things help create is a kind of inner and outer peace.
Yeah, well, I have to ask you, have you ever done sensory deprivation?
I have. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it really is. I just thought of that. I used to, you know, own a float spa here in Dallas. And yeah. Because so many people, after I experienced it, I was like, oh my gosh, people need to know about this. It's such an incredible tool to have for people that cannot still their mind. They don't know how or they don't understand it. I just think it's an incredible experience.
Yeah, and look, I think as obviously as modern as the technology is in experiencing something like that, you know, the Romans, a big part of their sort of daily ritual would be to frequent the baths, where they'd be sort of going in and out of cold water and hot water. And if you've ever really, if you've experienced, I was actually just in Budapest, and I went in this bath that had been there since the Turks set it up in the 16th century. You know, it is remarkably similar to the process of a sensory deprivation tank today. It's quiet mm-hmm. and it's dark, and you know, you can feel these sort of aromas and steams. And I think what they were trying to do is take some time away from the busy, dirty, dusty world of the ancient times, just as we're trying to flee the chaotic, busy digital world that we live in.
Mm-hmm. Well, for people out there that maybe don't have access to a float tank or have never done it, what is your best advice of how can they achieve stillness? What does your morning routine look like?
So for me, it's waking up early, and so it's one of the easiest and cheapest ways you can get stillness. You know, wake up before the emails and the conference calls and the television and all the things that sort of rile us up, get up early. I think one of the next things I do each morning is I sit with a journal, you know, and that's what survives to us from Marcus Aurelius is the journals that he kept. And then another big part of my morning is that I don't use my phone for the first 1 hour that I'm awake.
I read that.
And so taking that time away from the digital device allows me to be intentional about my morning. Just the number of people that I know who it's like the quality of their day is determined by what Donald Trump tweeted over the wee hours of the morning, or you know, wherever your political persuasion, there's people who are, they're reactive to the day because they're checking their phone every time they're waking up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, right?
Yeah.
And the final thing I would say that's a big part of my morning routine is I like to go for a long walk each morning. I usually take my kids with me. We go. We watch the sun come up. We're just away from devices. We're out in nature. We're moving. But we're not doing anything, right? Like, we're not working out. We're not, like, we're just outside experiencing. We're present. We're enjoying. And then I try to bring this stillness back to the work that I have to do for the day.
Wow. I bet your kids are super cool, like you, doing all of that. And it's the simple things in life, really, that give you the true happiness that we're all seeking.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think one of the wonderful things about stillness is that it is incredibly accessible. It's available to everyone. It's timeless. It's not dependent on, it's just dependent on you and your choices. And so, you know, as much as even meditation has kind of become commoditized and it's use this app and, you know, go on this retreat or follow this conference, like the reality is all these things were discovered many, many thousands of years ago and are available to us now if we choose to access them.
Well, you know, in your book, Stillness is the Key, it's a fabulous book for everyone out there listening. I mean, I'm giving it away for Christmas presents. It's a great gift to give to anyone. But in the book, you talk about the domain of the soul, and you talk at length, or write at length, about Tiger Woods and his life experiences, and it's truly fascinating, his story. And so I have to ask you, what is the philosophical strategy elite athletes follow to perform at the highest level?
Yeah, I mean, for Tiger Woods, it was clearly some compartmentalization, right? He'd sort of had this disastrous, you know, dysfunctional personal life, but on the golf course, he was set, and he compartmentalized until eventually, you know, sort of one took over the other. I think the healthier athletes that I have been lucky enough to work with and talk with, one of the, I think, most philosophical strategies that they talk about is just this idea of the process, right? You hear, follow the process, you know, trust the process, rely on the process. And what they mean is you stop thinking about results, and what you think about is the sort of immediacy of the task in front of you. And so I think about this even with my books. I don't think about, you know, debuting on the bestseller list. I don't think about how many copies I'm going to sell. I don't even think about what the cover is going to look like. What I think about is, like, the sentence that I'm writing right now, mm-hmm. and then the next sentence, and the next sentence. And you break these big, intimidating, difficult, you know, uncertain projects up into smaller pieces that allow you to, you know, manage them much, much more effectively.
Well, you know, you bring up your book. I brought it up, of course. That's what we're talking about. But something I think this is probably the strangest question that you have ever been asked about your books, but I love the size of them. Was that intentional?
I would say in some sense, yes, in some sense, no. I remember when I was writing The Obstacles, the way the publisher said, you know, here's the size we're thinking. And I said, sure. You know, and what we found is that people liked it exactly as you said. It's easy to carry around.
Yeah.
You can read it on an airplane. And so I definitely continued, but it was one of those sort of happy accidents. Although my editor, I'm sure, would say that it wasn't an accident at all. It was very intentional. But I got lucky in that I listened.
Well, you know, the content sets them apart from so many other books. And the size of the book, I think, follows that. And Arianna Huffington obviously agreed, because she referred to it as this little but soulful book will open the door to a healthier, less anxious, and more productive life and career. And that's pretty profound coming from someone so successful. And you know, oh my gosh. So there's so many things I want to ask you, and I want our listeners to understand what your books are all about. So, you know, what is your favorite story about stillness and action?
One of the characters that I enjoyed writing about most was Churchill. And I was just in London, and I took a cab from Heathrow to go to Chartwell, which was Churchill's estate. I just loved that, you know, the sort of busiest man in the world, probably maybe the busiest, most important person in the 20th century. He'd always been ambitious. Like, people don't understand, in addition to being the prime minister, to saving the world from Nazism, Churchill wrote 10 million words in his lifetime. That's how he made his money. But what you can see at Chartwell is Churchill's, first off, Chartwell is surrounded by a large brick wall that Churchill laid himself. Mm-hmm. He was one of his hobbies was bricklaying. But you can go into his painting studio, and you can see a good chunk of the 500 or so paintings that he painted in his lifetime. And, you know, he even writes a book called Painting as a Pastime. And for him, stillness was something that he needed as he juggled these immense decisions and these matters of life and death. And painting was a way that he found leisure and some restoration and relaxation. It's also, you know, he'd been such a busy, ambitious person that he didn't, you know, often he hadn't cultivated the ability to look around and to breathe in nature and to notice the little things. And painting was an action that he took in a very action-packed life, but that was ultimately about achieving stillness even within all that chaos.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if you've seen The Crown. I'm going to guess that you have not.
I've seen some of it. It's a wonderful show.
Oh, my gosh. Like, I have just, part of the you know, the intrigue and delight of watching The Crown is how Winston Churchill is portrayed so well. And I found myself, like, writing down notes from what he would say, you know, getting up out of bed because I was watching. And I don't even typically watch anything on Netflix. I don't even remember the last time I watched anything on my laptop. I'm usually reading, but I have just been hypnotized by The Crown. It's so well done. And Winston Churchill is a big part of that.
Yeah, he's a fascinating character. My favorite line from him, he said, you know, we're all worms in this life.
Yes.
You know, basically meaningless, inconsequential, you know, tiny little things. He says, but I'd like to see myself as a glowworm. And I just found that to be wonderful.
No, it is. There's so many wonderful things about it. Did you want to ask something, Jill?
I would love to ask a question. You talk and write so much, Ryan, about people from the past, often these Stoics, that mm-hmm. have influenced you and your writing, and how we can take Stoicism and apply it to kind of this, you know, 2020 coming up. But I would love to know if there's any current people. We've had lots of other guests on the show actually mention you as an influence in their writing and their success. So I'm wondering if you have any current people that you follow that influence you and what you do and when you speak, just out of curiosity. Any other current authors?
Great question.
Sure. Yeah, there's a bunch of authors that I love. I think Cal Newport's books are fantastic. You know, he talks about this concept of deep work. And digital minimalism. I think both those ideas have been really influential to me. And then one of my favorite authors is Robert Greene, whose book The Laws of Human Nature I think is just sort of a masterpiece.
Wow.
Awesome.
Wow. Gosh. Okay, so where do I want to go with this with you? So many things I want to ask, like I said. Well, so, you know, so many people in our society, Ryan, are overstimulated.
Sure.
They're overscheduled and they're lonely. How do you find time to think and block out the chaos in our lives?
Well, I think a big part of that is what we were talking about earlier, is sort of being intentional about your usage of devices. Like, I think it's wonderful to use technology. I think the reality, though, is a lot of times we're being used by the technology, right? So if you're getting something out of it, it's great, but is it more often that you're, you know, sort of doing free work for Twitter or Facebook? So I think being intentional about your device usage, making sure that you're not sort of starting the day with it, don't sleep with it in the room, that's a big one for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other important thing, I think the reason a lot of people turn to their devices or turn to their work or whatever is that they're addressing an enormous void they feel because of the lack of relationships that they have in their lives.
Mm.
And so, you know, I feel fortunate to have been sort of taken off the market long before sort of Tinder and all these dating apps. It's you can imagine just like it feels wonderful. Oh, you just pull up this app and you can meet someone. But what these people, their personal lives become sort of a revolving door, and there's no home, there's no connection, there's no stability, there's no one to rely on. And so when they go through difficult times, or when they have anxiety or fears, or they are distracted by chaos, there's no one to sort of, you know, help them center themselves. And so that's obviously one of the things I talk a lot about in the book, is just the power and the importance of relationships.
You want another question? Jill's on fire like me. We're not going to let you off the air.
I have a question. Do you think that if people are finding it hard to create stillness or the time for meditation or purposeful time to set aside to do some of the things you mentioned, do you think that's because there's a issue with discipline? You mentioned athletes before, and I work with professional athletes in my business, and so the level of discipline is just usually kind of innate for them. It comes with the territory. But I wonder in just modern society, because I think a lot of people will just chuck it to the side, oh, stillness, I don't have time for that, or meditation, you know, that's for, you know, my religion doesn't believe in that. You know, there's always excuses to that. But really, I'm wondering in my head what your answer would be to, is it just a fundamental lack of discipline?
I mean, I do think that is a problem, but I think I don't necessarily know if it's innate. I think it's something you build. One of the analogies I see is like with reading. Obviously, as an author, like my whole life is built around reading. It's what I love, and so people go, "Oh, you know, you sort of it's so wonderful that you've always loved to read." And it's like one of the reasons I love to read is that I've been rewarded for it, right? Like that once you start to get a return on the time you put in, you do more and more of it, and I think for a lot of people, you know, they haven't seen the benefits of these things, so it becomes hard for them to sort of budget time for it. And so that one of the things that I wanted to do in the book, I'm talking about stillness, is talk about all the easy, accessible ways there are to start this process, rather than just say like, hey, if you meditate an hour a day, your whole life will be better. You know, the reality is people are just not going to do that, but maybe they will go for a walk. Right? Maybe they will not check their email the first thing in the morning. You know, maybe they will, you know, think about, you know, committing to some sort of relationship, right? Like I think there are a lot of ways to sort of make progress towards this. And when you start to do that, then it becomes a feedback loop, because you're like, wow, my life is better. I'm thinking clearer. I'm doing better work. I'm happier, you know, all of that.
Yeah, it's akin to the exercise and you know, eating better that we talk so much about this on the show. You don't always feel it right away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The more you do it,
right,
the more you start to notice the benefits.
Absolutely.
It's awesome.
And I know you're familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh, Ryan, and he's one of my favorite gurus, authors. Pieces Every Step is one of the first books of his that I read. And people don't understand, like, even when you're doing the dishes, you can drop your mind into a spirit of mindfulness and meditation by simply being more mindful while you're doing something as simple as the dishes, right?
Yeah, you can decide like, hey, I'm actually going to show up for this. Like, this isn't important, right? Like, this doesn't matter, but that doesn't mean I should be doing five other things at the same time. That doesn't mean I should let my mind go elsewhere. It's like, I'm actually going to feel the sort of water, you know, rushing over my hands, and I'm going to, you know, feel the scrubbing, and I'm going to listen to the sounds that it's making. You can decide to sort of show up and experience it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going all in.
See, I told you. I told her she was going to get so excited.
No, but I think something I'd like to circle back to that you said earlier that would be probably a huge takeaway for people is that we give up how we hold our mind and even our emotions and our feelings to circumstance. So like you were mentioning social media or whatever, it's maybe this stillness or meditation or however people want to package it up is just all about taking that power back, remembering that you have control over where your mind goes, how you're reacting to situations, not social media, not the news, not politics, not your neighbor, not the dishes you don't feel like doing, that you have control over that. If you just take a second to be still with it or to be present or however you want to explain it.
No, I think that's totally right. And it's like when you can accept like how little control you have in the world over all these external things, then you go, okay, what do I have control over? The one thing I do have control over are sort of my thoughts. And so maybe I'm not going to give that up so easily just because, you know, CNN is telling me I should be outraged.
Yeah. Well, you know, you write in the book about, you write the toxic form of ego has an evil twin often called imposter syndrome. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, you know, my book before this one was about ego. It's called Ego is the Enemy. And and one of the things that I heard from people, and it makes sense, is they go, I don't think my problem is ego. You know, my problem is sort of self-doubt or not believing in myself. And what I find when I talk to these people, when you really sort of dig into that sort of woe is me, the world is rigged against me, this is totally unfair, none of my ideas work, you know, I totally suck, the sort of racing voice that is, you know, sort of telling them how awful they are, at the core of that is almost its own form of ego, right? It's like, at the core of it is still like, me, 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 me. And you realize, like, even imposter syndrome, which is that sort of belief that you're a fraud, that people are going to catch you, you're going to be exposed. Like, if you think about it, it's like, why do you think people are thinking about you at all? They're probably thinking about themselves, right? and so I think it's clear that, you know, for some people, ego looks like, you know, the sort of Donald Trump ego or the Kanye West ego. But on the other side of it, it can be that, oh, it's not worth trying, everyone's out to get me, and that both sides of that are preventing those people from fully realizing their potential.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you did an interview recently, or I don't know how recently it was, but with Dan Schwabel, best-selling author, too, speaker, and entrepreneur, and he asked you a question. You talk about, you spoke earlier about having children. He asked you a question about raising your children in today's world, and I absolutely loved part. I'll just give the beginning of your answer. The power of learning to be by yourself is a big one. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, it's, you know, as a parent, you can sort of want to script every moment. You want to make sure they're supervised every moment. You want to make sure they're doing things the right way every moment. One of the things we think about with our kids is, like, are they learning to be by themselves? Are they learning to entertain themselves? And so, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, you hear them wake up in the morning and you want to rush in there and, you know, okay, we got to get ready for school and we got to do this and we got to do that. And one of the things we think about is like, no, let's give them a couple minutes. Let's, you know, as long as they're safe, you know, let them entertain themselves. To me, that's a valuable skill. The ability, you know, I have this quote from Blaise Pascal where he says, you know, all of our problems stem from our inability to sit in a room alone. And I got to imagine that part of that stems from childhood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can remember that's like going out and playing in the leaves or, you know, climbing trees, all kind of the same things. You don't see kids do that so much anymore, like at least not here in Dallas. I don't know about other parts.
Texas is probably better than San Francisco. But yeah, still, yeah. Everyone is losing that.
Yeah, they are. And I do think it's so important for child development to learn to just be and be alone. It's okay to be alone. You don't have to be stimulated all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And look, most of the great discoveries and inventions and creative works of history, where did they come from? They came from someone who was alone with their own thoughts and used them to make something that benefited lots and lots of people.
Right, like journaling. You spoke about that earlier in the interview. So this is my last question, and then I'll let go. How can you share some of the benefits of journaling and why it's so important?
Well, I mean, look, the list of people who have journaled throughout history is so, like, comically large that it almost is its own argument. But I think there's just value in sitting down and creating some distance between you and your thoughts. You know, Julia Cameron calls them sort of morning pages. I think starting the day by sort of dumping out some of the bad thoughts or anxieties or worries or, you know, habits that you have is just an amazing way to start the day. I think she described it as spiritual windshield wipers, and I just think that's the perfect way to express journaling. And so I would just advise people to, whatever it takes, however small you want to start, I have a journal that I do where you just write one sentence a day. You know, like, start with something like that and build the habit. I think you'll get incredible, you know, rewards out of it.
Wow. Well, you know what? If you're just now joining us, we're speaking with Ryan Holiday. He is a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller. The book we're talking about is Stillness is the Key. It's amazing. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your thoughts with us today. It was truly our honor.
Thank you for having me. This is wonderful.
Yes, it really was. All right, everyone, I'm going to go to break now and clear my head. What a fantastic time we had with Ryan Holiday. I really, really suggest that you go and get a copy of his book and read it and give it as a gift as well. We'll be right back with Jill Lane. You're listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, Navi Mendoza, and Jill Lane. We're going to be speaking here in just a second with Jill about controlling your cravings during the holiday season. But I wanted to let you know first that you can go to our website, oneliferadio.com, to download and listen to our podcast or subscribe to our newsletter. You can listen to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Or you can go to iHeartMedia.com to listen live or download the free iHeartRadio app and listen to us from anywhere in the world. A big shout out to our sponsors, great companies that bring guys like Ryan Holiday to the show and help us pay the bills. Great companies like Sun Warrior. You can get it at Vitamin Shop or put it in your smoothie at Smoothie King, or go and visit their website, sunwarrior.com, to learn more about all of their products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. And of course, No Evil Foods, award-winning No Evil Foods, is making meat from nothing but plants. And, oh, today's Teatless Tuesday.
Oh, I'm perfect. Back to our opening discussion.
Here I am. Well, we're doing it tonight. We're going to have some No Evil Sausage with onion and bell pepper and no teats. I think I'm going to do the follow your heart provolone cheese, and I'm going to melt on top and put it on a French bread. So that's my dinner tonight.
Wow.
In case you were wondering.
Indulgent.
Oh my gosh. And of course, Enviromedica, what a great company they are. They were founded to combat the negative impacts of the modern world with a mission to further the principles of evolutionary medicine as a new paradigm to healing. Learn more about all of Enviromedica's products at enviromedica.com. And Crazy Water, call me crazy, I don't mind. I love Crazy Water. I'm so giddy. I can't stop laughing.
Endorphins are on fire, girl.
My endorphins are on fire because I love speaking with such intelligent people that are really trying to change the world and make it a better place. And that would include Sun Warrior as well, one of our longtime sponsors, Enviromedica, all of them, Crazy Water, Veg World Magazine, the Wellbeing Journal, Paleo Magazine, and I don't think did I forget anybody? I don't think I did.
Nope.
At least not this week.
Not today.
Not today, but it's always a pleasure. Jill Lane's been on the show since the very beginning. You were one of the first people that I met on radio, actually.
I met you before the show even started.
Before the show even started. Yes, on another show where we were talking about floating Fridays. And
that's right.
Yeah. So that's back when I first brought sensory deprivation to Dallas. And as you heard from Ryan Holiday earlier in the show, 100% thumbs up. And it's an amazing experience if you can find a float business. There's not that many, but check it out. Google it. But always great to have Jill in studio. She is a pro athlete, health and nutrition coach, and founder of Fueling Champions, which is a 3-step sports performance and athletic nutrition program built to maximize the potential of student athletes and the parents that support them. You can find her on Instagram at Team Fueling Champions or her website, fuelingchampions.org. We're talking today about controlling your cravings during the holiday season based on a Thorne article that was written. So, you know, what do we need to know? Let's start with hunger versus craving.
I love that my colleagues at Thorne included this right off the bat in this article, because I think it, like we were just talking about with Ryan, it helps you take your power back. And we were talking during the break that whatever's happening right now, at least in this country, is so involved with people just like giving away their power all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just going to get peed off at everything on social media. And it's like, you know what? Just like slap yourself in the face a couple of times and wake up.
Yes.
Like, don't just give away your power so easily to something else or someone else or circumstance. Like, you are in control. So I love that they go over hunger versus cravings. And really quickly, they talk about, okay, hunger is a normal process. We've talked about ghrelin and leptin a few weeks back. That involves these two hormones that are either secreted by the stomach or fat cells, which is crazy to think about. That occurs normally like a few hours after you eat, like 3 to 5 hours after you eat. If you've had a solid meal, you should start to feel hungry again. That's normal.
And that's when you should get out of the kitchen and go to bed, right?
No, I mean, if it's normal hunger and it's been 3 to 5 hours and it's not midnight, then it's time to eat a meal. And they also talk about, okay, you know, when you're hungry, you start to feel that ghrelin action. You start to feel that grumbling in your stomach. You might start to feel a little tired. You know, there's just a distinct sensation to real hunger, as long as you're not ghrelin, there's something not messed up with your ghrelin and leptin, which there can be. And when you're hungry, it's usually not for like a specific food. You're not like, I must have a chocolate bar right now or someone will die. You know, usually you're just like, I'm hungry, and you can make a rational choice. It's not like you're ravaging the grocery store because, you know, your blood sugar's out of control. So that's hunger. Craving is like I just demonstrated.
I'm an expert on
craving. You must have the drive-through donut store right now, no matter what. You're going to speed through the stoplight. You know, it's like, oh, you feel out of control with a craving. You feel like you can't control it.
Yeah.
And it's for usually salty or sweet or fatty things, because those are the things that trigger all of those happy little, they're fleeting, but in the moment they trigger all of these happy little feelings where we have a void.
I think it was Marie Early, she said something like, you know, if you're really hungry, you'll crave an apple. You know, or something like
you'll
that.
You'll be able to make, I think what I would say is you'll be able to make a rational choice. You'll be able to make a rational choice. You'll be able to say, you know what? Cool. I'll have, you know, protein, fiber, veg. You can make a rational choice. When you're craving something, forget about it. People who have cravings aren't going to fix a bowl of broccoli.
I lost my mind again last night. I'm like, I got to get off this crazy train. I've been having all these cravings and just been eating, you know, and part of it is having it in the house. I have to not have it in the house.
Yep. Yeah. Don't bring the enemy into the house. My long-term colleague and mentor friend, JJ Virgin, taught me that a long time ago. Yep. So keep the enemy out of the house this holiday season. Do the 3-bite rule. Get protein at each meal, exercise, get sleep, and stay hydrated. That's like one of the number one things. You are thirsty. It's cold out. You don't think you need to drink. You do.
You do.
But it will curb your cravings.
Well, we're going to be right back. We're going to do a quick station identification. We'll be right back. You're listening to Jill Lane on One Life Radio. Jackson Brown. I'll be seeing him in a couple of weeks.
Oh, did you get tickets? I told you about that billboard I saw of him.
I believe I have front row, so yeah.
Ooh, you're going to get another guitar pick.
I sure am.
You're gonna. I know the story.
Oh my gosh. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette. I've got Jill Lane here in studio with me and the rest of the crew. We want to get back into this topic of controlling your cravings during the holiday season. So right before we went to break, you were talking about...
Jill thought the show was over, y'all.
She heard the music because I managed the clock a little differently today because I wanted to give Ryan Holiday more time so we would have necessary time with Jill.
That was awesome.
So, I thought I heard the buzzer ring. It was like I got one shot. It's got to go in for 3 points.
Well, you've got 5 more minutes. So, so you know, what are some of the most common causes of food cravings?
I think the number one. It would be a tie, but I think the first thing that helps people with the cravings is to create, and this is such a 4-letter word in nutrition, but more balanced meals. And so making sure that each meal has something that balances blood sugar, which is fiber and protein. I don't care where you get your protein from. It's not a segment to really hash that out, but protein and healthy fats and fiber help to regulate blood sugar, ghrelin, and leptin. And those things are what drive us to crave when we shouldn't be hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And so first is to set up proper meals, because once you do that, then the physiology that's driving you back to these quick fix foods can start to be repaired. And for mm-hmm. some people, it's something that happens quickly within a day or two or three. But if you have some insulin resistance or some hypoglycemia, which a lot of people who have really bad cravings have, it will take a little time. You might need to eat smaller meals more frequently, which I generally don't recommend to most people. But with people with hypoglycemia, you need to do that. Lots of fiber, healthy fats, some protein to get blood sugar and insulin moderated. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. The second is to manage your stress, because we use food like a drug
to
manage our stress hormones.
Yeah.
And so how you do that goes back to kind of what we were talking about with Ryan earlier, is totally dependent upon you. Do you need to go exercise? Do you need to go for a walk? Do you need to journal? Do you need to dance? Do you need to call, phone a friend? Do you need to go to church? I don't know. For everybody, it's different.
It's different, yeah.
Yoga stresses some people out. And for other people, it's, you know, it kind of clears their mind. So find a way to do something that makes you feel happy, that gets those endorphins going, that makes you not so much think about stuff that might be kind of heavy on your shoulders, and create some, again, that word I don't like, balance, mm-hmm. so that you can have more resilience, so that you're not using food and alcohol as a drug to get you through the ups and downs of what's happening with your physiology.
Yeah. And it's easy to do. It's very easy to do. And alcohol also dehydrates you, and that complicates
perpetuates the cravings.
Yeah, it does. Well, and I do that. You know, I admit it. Like at night, I come home. Typically, it's not till like 6 or 7 o'clock, and I'll pour my first little tiny little glass of wine. I have these little tiny glasses.
Well, now you got a big one.
Well, she bought me a wine glass with
growler.
My name on it. Yeah. No, but I do. I actually recycle yogurt, glass yogurt containers, and I use those for little tiny glasses because I don't want to drink a lot. And so I try to be mindful about even the glass that I pour it into. Mm-hmm.
Well, some people will be like, well, it helps my brain calm down and gets me to sleep. But the other side of the coin is that it usually wakes you up at night
then
you don't sleep as well. And then the next day you're tired and cranky. And so the snowball's building, building, building. You don't crave broccoli, like I said, when you're tired and cranky. You want more caffeine, you want sugar, you want carbs, you want something fatty and greasy, because that makes you feel momentarily better. And then again, it's like a vicious cycle.
Well, yeah, so, and if you're really hungry, a big chunk of broccoli is going to look, you know, absolutely wonderful to you. Or an apple, like, oh my gosh, that looks delicious, because you're starving. You're really hungry. You're not just having a craving.
Again, when you're hungry, you make more rational decisions around food. When you're craving something, just go back and take an inventory. Has my sleep been bad? Have I been exercising? Am I dehydrated? And how have I put my meals together? You will be able to solve it right away.
And holiday parties, don't show up starving.
Don't show up starving, and employ the 3-bite rule. If there's something really worth it, have 3 bites. Imagine you're being filmed on TV, so don't shove the whole bowl in your mouth in 3 bites. Have 3 nice bites, choose it, enjoy it, and have a great time socially.
That's funny. Tony, have an egg. That's from The Sopranos. That was random. I'm crazy. Oh my gosh. I'm giddy. I'm gay. I'm happy. I just love Ryan Holiday. Oh my gosh. You got to get his book, Stillness is the Key. It's amazing. Give it as a holiday gift. Everyone, you get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there today and be contagiously positive.